A most extraordinary thing has happened. The Wallypug has been to London. But there, I am forgetting that possibly you have never read The Wallypug of Wye, in which case you will, of course, know nothing about His Majesty, and so I had better explain to you who and what he is. To begin with, then, he is a kind of king of a place called Wye, which adjoins the mysterious kingdom of Zum. I am afraid, though, that if you searched your atlases for a very long while, you might not find either of these places, for the geographers are so undecided as to their exact position that they have not shown them on the maps at all. Some little friends of mine, named Girly and Boy, have been there, however, and I can tell you, if you like, the way they went. This is the way to Wye. Just go to bed and shut your eyes and count 100 one by one. And perhaps you'll find to your surprise that you're at Y when this is done. I say perhaps because this only happens when you have been particularly good all day. And sometimes boys and girls are not quite as good as they, but there, I won't say what I was going to, for I'm quite sure that it would not apply to you. This is the way to Zum. Not when the moon is at its full, but just a tiny boat-shaped thing. You may see Piero sitting there and hear the little fella sing. If so, just call him and he'll come and carry you away to Zum. There now, I've told you the way to go to both places, so that if you wish to, you can go there whenever you please. I'm telling you all this because one day in the spring, Girly and Boy, who live in another part of London, came to see me. And we had been talking about these things for about the 100th time, I should think. For these children are never tired of telling me of all the strange things which happened to them when they journeyed to these wonderful places. In fact, they were just arguing as to which was the most interesting place to go to, Wye or Zum, when my housekeeper, Mrs. Pudgy, came to the door with the unwelcome news that the carriage had come for my little friends, and that it was time to say goodbye. After they had gone, I sat staring into the fire, wondering where Y could be. And if there was really such a person as the Wallypug. When my little dog Dick, who had been lying on the rug before the fire, suddenly jumped up and, barking excitedly, ran to the other end of the study where a picture, which I had bought the day before at an auction sale, stood leaning against the wall. Now, this picture had been sold very cheap, because no one could tell at all what it was about. It was so old and dusty, and the colors were so dark and indistinct. I had bought it hoping that it might prove valuable. And there it stood, till it could be sent to be cleaned and restored. Imagine my surprise then when, on following Dick across the study, I discovered that the colors in the picture had all become bright and were working one into the other in the most remarkable way. Red running into green and blue into yellow, while a little patch of black in the center of the picture was whirling round and round in quite a distracting manner. What could it all mean? I stared and wondered, till out of the confusion there gradually grew shapes which bore some resemblance to human beings, and presently I could recognize quite distinctly, first, a young man in knee breeches, smiling in a particularly self-satisfied way, and escorting a large fish who was walking upright with slippers on his tail and who wore a waistcoat and necktie. And then an amiable looking old gentleman carrying a wand who was followed by a curious little person wearing a crown and carrying an orb and scepter. And then a particularly stiff and wooden-looking soldier stood at the back of this strange group. Judge of my amazement when, quite as a matter of course, the whole party deliberately stepped out of the picture into the room, and before I could realize what had happened, the old gentleman with the wand came forward with a flourish and an elaborate bow and announced, "Ahem! His Majesty the Wallypug of Y and Sweet." I was so astonished that for the moment I could not think what to say. But at last I managed to stammer as I made a low bow to the Wallypug. "I am delighted to make your Majesty's acquaintance." The Wallypug smiled very affably and held out his hand. "I have come up for the Jubilee, you know," he said. "We've come up, you mean to say, Wallypug," corrected the old gentleman with the wand, frowning somewhat severely. "I am the Wallypug's professional advisor," he continued. "I'm called the doctor-in-law. Allow me to introduce the rest of our party. This," he went on, bringing the young man with a self-satisfied smile forward, "is the Jubilee Rhymester from Zum. He hopes to become a minor poet in time. And this," indicating the wooden-looking soldier, "is Sergeant 1 and 9, also from Zum." Here the doctor-in-law took me aside and whispered in my ear, "Slightly cracked, crossed in love, speaks very peculiarly, capital chap though." Then crossing to where the fish was standing, he said, "And this is A. Fish Esquire, the celebrated lecturer on the witchness of the what, as compared with the thatness of the thus. He desired to accompany us here in order to find material for a new lecture which he is preparing upon the perhapness of the improbable. He's awfully clever," he whispered impressively. "I'm sure I'm delighted to see you all," I said, shaking hands with each one, till I came to the fish, who held out a fin, "How do you do?" I stammered, somewhat taken aback by this strange proceeding.
"Quite well, with the exception of a slight cold in my head," said the fish. "I'm subject to them, you know. It's big, it's the water so much, I fancy." And he smiled.
I don't know if you've ever seen a fish smile, but if not, I may tell you that it is a very curious sight. "I suppose you can manage to put us up here for a month or two," calmly suggested the doctor-in-law after a pause.
"Oh, dear me," I exclaimed in alarm. "I don't think my housekeeper could possibly..."
"Why not ask her?" suggested the doctor-in-law, touching the bell. Ding, ding. A moment or two afterwards, a knock at the door announced that Mrs. Spatchy was there. "Oh, Mrs. Spatchy," I said, stepping just outside. "These gentlemen, that is to say, His Majesty the Wallypug of Y and Sweet, have honored me with a visit, and I am anxious, if possible, to offer them such hospitality as my poor home affords. Do you think that we can manage anyhow to find room for them, for a few days at any rate?" Now, Mrs. Pachi is a very remarkable woman, and I have never known her to show the slightest surprise at anything, and so far from seeming alarmed at the prospect of having to entertain such notable visitors, she seemed positively delighted.
His Majesty of Wai, sir? How charming! Of course, we must do our best. And how fortunate that I put on my best gown today, isn't it? Oh, dear me, and shall I be presented to His Majesty? Certainly, Mrs. Pudgy, if you wish it, I said. In fact, if you will call General Mary Jane, I will introduce you both, as you represent my entire household. Mrs. Pudgy disappeared, returning almost immediately, followed by the servant, General Mary Jane, with her mouth wide open, and accompanied by the cat, who rejoices in the extraordinary name of Mrs. Mehitable Murchison. These members of my household were duly presented to the lollipop. Mrs. Pudgy made her curtsy with great dignity, but General Mary Jane was so overcome at the thought of being presented to royalty that she fell flat on her hands and knees in her humility. Well, Mrs. Mehitable Murchison, realizing, no doubt, the truth of the old saying that a cat may look at a king, went up and sharpened her claws on the lollipop's legs in the most friendly manner possible. It was when the cat caught sight of A. Fish Esquire that she completely lost her presence of mind, and with arched back and bristling fur, glared at him in amazement.
Pretty pussy cubalog, then, said the fish, stooping down and trying to stroke her with one of his fins.
But Mrs. Mehitable Murchison, with a startled glance, tore out of the room, showing every sign of alarm.
She's so fond of fish, too, as a rule, ain't she, Mom? Remarked General Mary Jane, who had somewhat overcome the awe with which she had at first regarded the presence of royalty.
Fond of fish? Repeated A. Fish Esquire inquiringly. What do you mean?
Why, you see, sir, explained Mrs. Pudgy, we often have fish for dinner, and, that is to say,
The fish was glaring at her in a horrified way, and Mrs. Pudgy had become quite nervous.
Let's change the subject, suggested the doctor-in-law, to our great relief. The most important question for the moment is, where are we all going to sleep?
Well, this gave Mrs. Pudgy an opportunity for exercising her wonderful ability for management, and after arranging for the lollipop to have the spare bedroom and the doctor-in-law to have my room, I was to have a bed made up in the study, while the Jubilee Rhymester was to sleep in the attic. 1 and 9 was to have a box under the stairs, and there only remained A. Fish Esquire to dispose of.
There is the bathroom, Mum, suggested General Mary Jane brilliantly. We could put a lid on the bath and make up a bed there.
Better still, fill it with water, and then I could sleep in it, suggested the fish.
Oh, yes, of course, said Mrs. Pudgy. And now I must go and see about the supper. And with a low curtsy to the lollipop, the admirable little woman hurried out, followed by General Mary Jane, who gave a nervous little bob when she reached the door. And they had scarcely disappeared before 1 and 9 came up to me and whispered,
I am muchly impressionated by that lady with the most military-ish name who has just gone out. Can you kindly inform me, is she detached?
Detached?
I inquired in bewilderment. Whatever do you mean?
If a person is not attached to anyone else, they are detached, I suppose, are they not?
Said 1 and 9 rather impatiently.
Well, if you put it that way, I suppose they are, I replied, laughing.
You mean, has she a sweetheart?
Well, really, I don't know. I have an idea, though, that Mrs. Pudgy does not allow followers.
Then I shall considerize my prospectuousness with great hopefulosity, remarked the soldier with considerable dignity, walking back to the lollipop's chair.
What does he say? Asked the Jubilee Rhymester. He's a little cracked, you know. Could you make out what he was driving at?
Oh, yes, I could understand within a little what he meant, I replied. He seems to have fallen in love with General Mary Jane at first sight, from what I can gather.
Really? Dear me. He's always doing that sort of thing, do you know? And he generally asks me to write poems for him when he gets into that state. I have written as many as 137 odes in 1 month on his behalf.
Good gracious, I replied. Does he pay you well for them?
Pay me? Exclaimed the Jubilee Rhymester, staring at me in surprise. Of course not. Do people ever get paid for writing poetry?
Well, yes, to be sure they do, I answered.
Well, I've never heard of such a thing in all my life, said the Jubilee Rhymester. I always thought that poets had to pay to have their verses used at all, and that was why they were always so poor while they were alive. Of course, I knew that people sometimes made a fuss about them after they were dead, but I have never heard of such a thing as a live poet being paid for his work.
Nonsense, I replied. I believe that quite a lot of money is sometimes paid by the magazines and other papers for poems and verses.
Well, I am delighted to hear it, said the Jubilee Rhymester. I shall certainly start writing tomorrow. I have no doubt whatever that I shall make my fortune before I go back to Zum.
Shortly after this, Mrs. Pecci announced that supper was served. And a little later, my guests retired to rest, being thoroughly tired out with their long journey. And I sat up in my study a little while longer to smoke a pipe, but was just thinking of going to bed when there was a tap at the door, and the doctor-in-law entered.
I say, I thought I had better come and arrange with you about money matters, he said. I didn't like to mention such things before the others. Now then, he continued, how much are you going to pay us for staying with you?
Pay you? I gasped. What on earth do you mean?
Well, you see, it will be a great thing for you to have such distinguished visitors. Don't you know? And you ought to be quite willing to pay liberally for the honor, said the doctor-in-law, smiling amiably.
Now, Girlie had told me what a greedy, avaricious person the doctor-in-law really was, despite his benevolent appearance. But this cool cheek almost took my breath away. I was determined, however, to let him see at once that I was not to be imposed upon. So I said as firmly as I could, now look here, Mr. Doctor-in-law. Please understand once and for all that as you were all so kind to my little friend Girlie when she was at Y, I'm quite willing to entertain His Majesty the Wally Pug and the rest of you to the very best of my ability. But as for paying you for being here, the idea is absurd, impossible. But just then, a terrific hullabaloo in the passage caused us both to run to the door. We could hear that the noise proceeded from the bathroom, and hurrying to the door, we found A. Fish Esquire sitting up in the water, shouting for help, while Mrs. Mehutable Murchison and a whole group of her feline friends were out on the tiles, glaring through the window. Meow, 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 meow.
Dear B, panted the fish when he saw us. I'm so frightened. Just look at all those cats. I had a beat to sleep and was just dreaming that someone was saying Mrs. Behutable Burgesson is so fond of fish. And we often have fish for dinner. When I woke up and saw all those horrible cats looking at the widow, it quite give me a turn. Do drive them away, please. We soon did this, and while pulling down the blinds, we left A. Fish Esquire to his dreams
and soon afterwards retired to rest ourselves.